Hello and welcome to Father Figures, a show about parenting with an emphasis on fatherhood, uncommon fathers, fathers of all stripes. Here is where we explore the joys and the griefs, the risks and rewards of being a parent. I'm Stephen Amaya. Today's guest is Jeremy D. Haston, and I came across him as a father who attended the convention last month in San Antonio of the National At-Home Dads Network, a group that advocates for fatherhood. We spoke after the convention.
My wife and I decided right before our daughter was born that I was going to be a stay-at-home parent. I was working retail, so my schedule was very varied. I never knew exactly what I was going to be working, and most of my income was going to be going to paying for childcare. That's kind of the general story that happens a lot with stay-at-home parents.
Yeah, childcare is a really...
And it's certainly, my job also being not very stable as far as income-wise, also made that decision a little easier for us. My wife made more money than I did, and I was already kind of the homemaker. I was already the one who did all of the grocery shopping and all of the cooking. My wife doesn't cook. She was never taught how to. And I'm the second oldest of nine. My mom made sure that we all knew how to cook, because she was certainly not going to cook for all of us every night. But I went into parenthood thinking that I would end up having, you know, two or three children, kind of the average family. Being the, again, the second oldest of nine, I knew I didn't want anything that big, because I have absolutely no idea how my parents did anything at all. But we ended up with just one child, and decided that she was my mom's 13th grandchild, and we were like, that's enough kids. But I never, I honestly didn't think for a long time that I was going to be a parent. I just kind of always thought I would be the cool uncle that would, well, for all my nieces and nephews, that I would buy them beer. I mean, take them camping. And it wasn't until after I met my wife that I ever thought that there was ever even any possibility of me having children. But we ended up with our daughter. And I will tell you that it certainly changed me, I think, for the better, which I'm sure is an answer that a lot of people would use. But I became a lot more cognizant of things in this world that I didn't want her to have to grow up in. So I started doing a lot of things to try to change what I saw as problems that I wouldn't have cared about possibly before I had her. I certainly became a lot more active in like social justice issues and things like that after I had her.
I did the same. Now my daughter is she has cerebral palsy, and it was interesting to see how society treated her, you know, very as almost as if she did not exist, you know. And I think about there was a time in this country back in the 1600s when she would have been burned at the stake as a witch, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's, I'm glad we've come a long way, but it really is a challenge, you know, it really is a challenge. What did you have to learn about fatherhood to be where you are today? And, what's been your biggest lesson?
Well, this is one that I actually heard recently and is very much stuck with me. But it's not something that I think I kind of knew it ahead of time, but I never had had it worded this way. We are not trying to raise children. Now, in some exceptions, like, and Stephen, you and I have talked about this with your child. But for the most part, we are not trying to, quote unquote, raise children. We are trying to raise adults who will one day, for the most part, not need us anymore. And I mean, obviously, with exceptions like yourself, that's a given. But I want my daughter to always know that she can come to me. However, the things that I'm trying to teach her now are, in essence, trying to put me out of a job.
Yeah, I really like
Where,
your thought about raising an adult. That's what we do. We're, citizens, people in society.
right, I want her to be able to be capable of being herself and being her own complete person outside of just her relationship with my wife and myself.
What's the greatest risk you've taken with your child?
Oh, that one's easy. We, a couple of years ago, I was born in Texas, in West Texas, and then I moved to Central Texas as a child, and then I went back to West Texas for college. And then after that, I moved back to Central Texas and lived in Austin area for 20 years and had literally never lived anywhere else a day of my life. And 3.5 years ago, when we were getting ready, I guess almost 4 years ago now, when we were getting ready for my daughter to start kindergarten, and we started looking at, I didn't want her going to school there. I went to school in Texas, and I had to spend a long time unlearning things that I had learned there. And I didn't want her going through that. I didn't want,
Like what did you learn?
I guess the most glaring one was, it was very, I don't know why this sticks out in my head. My freshman year of high school, my biology teacher had us do one day on evolution and then gave us an open book test on it. And he said, because I am a Christian, I don't believe in this, I don't want to teach it, but they make me. But his way of getting around it was to do one day on it, very briefly, and do an open book test on something that is as intricate as evolutionary theory. I wanted her to grow up learning that there are other thought processes beyond just the basic, beyond just the black and white binary. I'm going to be honest, I grew up fairly bigoted and was taught a lot of things that about, a very whitewashed version of history. And I wanted better for her because I had to spend a long time after school learning truth about things that were never taught to me. The biggest risk was we moved halfway across the country right before she started school. We left our families, we left our friends, we left all of our support. My wife has an aunt who lives in St. Louis, but she's in her 80s, so it's not like, that's a big support system there. And that was a huge risk for us. Now, so far it's worked out. My daughter came home from school one day in kindergarten talking about how there are some people who are non-binary and that she was taught that and understood. And that is not something she would have learned in Texas.
Yes. What has been the greatest grief you've experienced as a father?
Well, this it took a little while for me to know how to say this. So the greatest grief I've had as a father was before I was a father. My wife and I lost our first child very early. She was still pregnant, so it was a miscarriage. But we had a name picked out. We had started imagining life with our son, and then we lost him before we ever got a chance to hold him. And I, that's part of the reason we decided on just one child, was because after we had our daughter, my wife was 40 years old when my daughter was born. And yes, women have children after 40 years now, but it's a lot harder, it's a lot riskier. And after having gone through that one time, it was just not something we could ever go through again.
I understand that very well. When my daughter had her stroke, everything changed, and nothing was funny for a year. I don't think I laughed for a year. It was really hard, and but I'm a better man for it,
Well, and I, that is the way that I try to look at it is that if we'd had our son and we decided to stop at one, I wouldn't have my daughter. So as much as I miss him, I wouldn't trade her for anything.
What was your father like?
My parents divorced when I was five. And my father was very big on work, was very big on learning how to do things with your hands. Like I learned a lot of stuff from him as far as remodeling. He owned a home remodeling company for a long time, and he was very big on when we were with him, we were going to work some, and we were going to play some, and we were going to love each other the entire time. And that was great, but he wasn't around. Like there were plenty of times growing up where he did not take his visitation. And years later, we never understood. And years later, he finally told us it was because whenever he would drive away after dropping us off after a weekend visit, he would see us crying in the rearview mirror, and it broke his heart. And his way to dealing with that was to just not do that, was to just have a reason why he couldn't pick us up for the weekend. And I resented him for that for a long time. I really did. And he tried later on in life to make up for that with us, but he made some big mistakes. He was divorced three times, and he used to try to give me marital advice. And I told him, "Dad, I love you, and there's a lot of things I'll listen to you on, but this is not one of them. Unless you're going to tell me, hey, I did this and it went horribly wrong, don't do that. Then there's not a whole lot you can tell me about how to treat my wife, because Jen and I have been married longer than all three of his marriages combined."
Do you have brothers and
He was,
sisters?
again, I'm the second oldest of nine.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yes.
Now a lot of them are step, so they're not, it's not like my mom birthed nine children. But quite a few brothers and sisters. My dad just didn't have great relationships. Like he was good with his hands, but he was bad with people, except for just like in passing. He would talk to anybody. He would, if he was driving around and saw you outside working on your house, he would stop and talk to you and ask you what you were doing, and give you any kind of advice that he had on whatever the project was, or maybe learn something from you. And he was great in passing like that, but when it came to deep relationship stuff, he just didn't know what to do.
Did he have anger issues?
No, not really.
Oh, that's
No.
good.
But it's weird because his parents were married for 71 years before my grandfather passed away.
That's a long time.
So I don't know how he just never got that lesson from them. He learned everything else, then never got that.
Just some personality types are that way.
Well, and that's
Go ahead.
kind of where I was going earlier is that I've learned one, to me, probably one of the other most important lessons. Somebody asked me recently, what is it, if you could sum up being a good father in one sentence, what would it be? And to me, it's always try to be better. Always try to be a better father, a better person, a better advocate, a better friend, a better partner for your spouse or your partner, and if you're not married, to always try to be better and to make the world a little bit of a better place for them. Right? Like I've joked that the way our world is going, I don't have to worry about saving for college for her, because either one side's going to win and college is going to be free, or the other side's going to win and she's going to be searching for clean water in the radioactive wasteland. Either way, I'm going to have to pay for college, right? Now, we are saving for college, but Because what I'm hoping is that the first side wins, and then I can take all that money and use it for something else.
Yeah.
But I think if we're not trying to change for the better, we're not trying to better ourselves, we're not trying to make the world a better place for our children, then what are we even doing here? Like, I didn't have a daughter to have somebody to take care of me in my old age. I had a daughter because I wanted to see her life for her. I wanted her to be able to marry who she wants to marry when she's that age. I want her to understand that we're supposed to take care of the world. And I think one of my biggest joys as a father right now is seeing her doing that. So we drive around and we see unhoused people on the side of the street. And she asked Dad, what can we do to help them? So we came up with the idea of doing hygiene bags. We get donations of things like deodorant and soap and baby wipes and toothbrushes and those kinds of things. And we put together bags that we just keep in the car and we pass out as we're driving around. And it's all because my daughter asked, what can I do to help them?
Wow, that's great.
We, a couple of times a year, we go downstairs, we put on rubber gloves and we get our, I carry a 5 gallon Home Depot bucket, and my wife carries a 5 gallon, and my daughter has a 2 gallon, and we have grabbers, and we walk up and down our street just picking up trash, and try to encourage other people to do the same. And I've got videos on my Facebook of my daughter asking people, "Please help us on Earth Day, that we're going to clean up the neighborhoods, and can you help us by cleaning up yours?"
Wow, that's great. She's standing on
We
some
go,
good shoulders.
we go to Pride Parade, and she's the youngest tattoo artist in Illinois, is the way that it's worded, because she'll do our church has a booth at Pride Parade, and she does the temporary tattoos for people as they're walking by.
Oh, that's nice.
And she's been doing that since she was 7. In fact, we're going Saturday for this year's. Our town has one near us that's in October because it's so hot in June. And she's going to be hugging people who want hugs and giving them temporary tattoos because she wants to support people
That's
for who
great.
they love.
Wow. It's
She helps with like food drives and organizes cans and stuff, and she's 9 years old.
Well, it sounds like you have a strong sense of faith, and it's manifesting itself in what she does and how she grows.
I want this world to be a better place, and I think I'm trying to raise somebody who's going to make it happen.
That's it. And I think about what one musters inside oneself to make sure that happens, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we tried to just explain things like it's a funny story. When she was learning about non-binary people in kindergarten, and she's 6 at this point. And she comes home and she's like, "Daddy, so and so is a boy." And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "But he likes cookies." And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "But I'm a girl." "Yeah. And I like cookies." And I said, "Yeah, that's true." And I said, "But remember, there are people who are not boys or girls." And she said, "And they like cookies?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Okay." All she cared about was, do you like cookies or not? If you like cookies, you're okay in her book.
That's right. And if there's something getting in the way of cookies, we have to fix it.
And like it's incredible to me that there's ways, like so many parents think that you can't explain things like that to young children. They don't care that about the hate that we put on people. They just, hey, is somebody nice to me? I'm going to be nice to them. And it's not until they learn later on that you're not supposed to be nice to these people that that's when they stop. But prior to that, they just, if you like cookies, we can be friends.
If you had the chance to go back out in the working world and make money, would you?
Oh, I mean, I already am, but not in the not outside the home.
Right.
So I have a job now because when she started school, it was like I'm not just going to sit here
Right.
while she's working at school all day and watch TV.
Yeah.
So I went back to work right before she started kindergarten for a clinic, and I've been working for them ever since.
Okay.
But I work from home now. Would I take a job outside of my house? Not likely.
Yeah.
I very much enjoy that I can take her to the bus in the morning and I can get her from the bus in the afternoon and get her snack and kind of get her settled in and started with her homework. I still really enjoy being able to take off and go pick her up if she gets sick at school or if she has a doctor's appointment. I'm still the one who handles all of that. I'm still the one who handles her school supplies and I buy her clothes and all of that stuff. So I still want to be the primary caregiver, but I do have a job. I just work from home.
Yeah, well, working from home makes it a lot easier. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. I don't understand companies. Like I kind of get their reason why they don't want to have people working from home, but I don't understand why we haven't been doing it this way forever.
Yeah, technology is a wonderful thing.
I've got a load of her clothes in the dryer and a load of towels in the washer that I need to go move over in a minute.
Oh yeah. Do you remember diapers?
Oh yeah, for sure.
So many diapers. Yeah.
All the time. And my daughter is a giant. So when she was born, she was 11 pounds, 8 ounces.
Wow.
Huge kid. But I'm 6'2 and my wife is 6 foot.
Oh, okay.
So she's going to be big, which makes buying clothes for her really problematic right now because
Yeah.
she's already in like adult smalls and mediums.
Okay.
And trying to find adult clothes that are cute enough for a 8, 9 year old girl, but also appropriate enough, is a little hard. And I
I
remember
imagine.
we had to go into like the overnight diapers that are for, larger children, teenagers almost, early on with her because of how big she was. And she's not big, but she's just tall. She's the size of a 14 to 16 year old.
Yeah, I'm 6'2", and my wife is 4'11". So she doesn't know I'm bald.
it's I my wife used to joke that that was one of the reasons she wanted to go out with me in the first place was because she's 6 foot and most men that she had dated were not.
Shorter.
And I was the first person that she'd ever dated who kind of made her feel, petite, for lack of a better way to put it.
Jeremy D. Haston, thanks for being a guest on Father Figures. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Stephen. I appreciate it.
All right. I really liked what Jeremy said about raising adults. After all, it seems to be adults running the world. Great job, by the way. It's hard to raise good adults when, as children, we are subject to divorce or substance abuse or living in Texas, any number of things which may derail or delay a good adulthood, or at least color it. Bad habits can die hard. Then there's Jeremy's decision to get out of Texas. He actually made a run for it, and over the cactus curtain he went, wife and child in hand. He did that as an act of faith, and all faith isn't necessarily religious. And if you are in the turmoil of an unhappy family, growing into a healthy adult is more difficult. Remember, love is a skill. Faith and courage, they seem to be essential to keeping the fabric of society together. But it seems pretty clear that sometimes adults show up, and when they do, what do you know? If you're lucky, you might find yourself with a kid handing out hygiene kits. You may remember a couple of episodes ago when we went to the community baby shower in Seaside. It was a wonderful event, and the show I got out of it ended up being a good one. Some days after the baby shower, I received an email. It was effusive in its praise, and for that I am quite humbled. Here is an excerpt from Jess Salaccio. Thank you for being a part of this event and for honoring it in a way that exceeded anything I could have imagined. Hearing the voices of so many dads in all their vulnerability and strength was incredibly powerful. Your work makes space for connection, reflection, and healing. It reminds us what it means to show up for each other and for our families, and I believe Father Figures is helping make the world a more compassionate and nurturing place. That is perhaps the best email I've ever received. I'm not one to generally toot my own horn, but beep beep. To receive such a confirmation of one's efforts is an act of generosity and optimism that makes a man want to keep doing this. Dad joke. A horse walks into a bar. Bartender says, "Why the long face?" "That's an oldie. I just read a fascinating book on anti-gravity. I couldn't put it down. Ever since I got my wheelchair, my wife pushes me around and talks behind my back." I just got diagnosed with color blindness. It came totally out of the purple. What's brown and sticky? A stick. I want to thank Jason Shaw of Audionautics.com for the music, and to CC Blanca for the production assistance. And of course, thanks again to Jeremy Haston for his gracious candor on the show. If you'd like to get in touch with me, and I wish you would, please send along an email to radioranchero@gmail.com. What's the scariest tree in the forest? Bamboo. Thank you for listening, and remember, the days may be long, but the years are short. I want to put a word in here for the radio station. As you probably know, recent cuts have put a strain on the finances of community radio. And so, if you can, help to support what is a vital element of the larger community.